Welcome to the Lawyer Education Series. My name is Katie Kelso and I'm the Solicitor in Charge of Care and Protection at Legal Aid New South Wales. I would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of the land on which we meet today and the land on which you might be listening from today and pay my respects to the Elders past, present and emerging. Today I am really lucky to be joined by Simon Handebo, who is a Senior Children's Registrar based at the Parramatta Children's Court, and Caroline Sterling, who is also a Children's Registrar based at the Parramatta Children's Court. Welcome and thank you to you both for joining me today to talk about dispute resolution conferences and in particular the role of the child representative. Simon, I'm going to get you to kick things off. Can you give us a bit of background about dispute resolution conferences?
Great, thanks Katie. So as children's registrars, one of our main functions is to conduct the dispute resolution conferences for the Children's Court. The DRCs are often the first opportunity in this process and in the court proceedings for the child or young person to participate directly. And it's a unique forum for all of the parties to come together and work collaboratively towards common goals, including addressing any child protection concerns, identifying how a child's culture and family connections will be maintained in circumstances where they may not live with their parents. The discussion that takes place at DRCs often inform decision making that has huge consequences for a child or young person's life. I heard something the other day which I think was particularly relevant to this, and I'd just like to throw it out there for everyone to think about as we talk. The idea that justice is all about perspective, and in particular that justice is about a process and not necessarily about the outcome. And I think that's really where we sit with DRCs. The DRC is about a process and about ensuring that everyone can actively participate in decision making about their child and the family generally. And I think it's important that everyone has the opportunity to view DRCs not just as a forum to resolve the legal dispute, but as an opportunity for participation by all relevant people in the child's life, and also the issue of self-determination and making sure that families and communities are given the opportunity to make decisions about their children. The child and young person does have that fundamental right to participate in a decision that affects them, and this is enshrined in the Care and Protection Act in sections 9 and 10. It's also important to note that a child or young person is entitled to attend a DRC, and from a children's registrar's perspective, attendance won't be refused unless an order has been made excluding them from the proceedings. So this is outlined a little bit in the practice note 3 at paragraph 6.1, where it states personal attendance of a child or young person is not required. However, the child or young person may attend if the child or young person so wishes, with advance notice to the children's registrar and the parties, so that the appropriateness of the child or young person's attendance can be addressed. I'll just flag that this advance notice is imperative to allow the children's registrar to be able to canvass different options for modes of attendance, and that's something that we'll discuss in a bit more detail a little bit later.
Thanks, Simon. So, Caroline, I'm going to come to you. There's a well-known quote, which is that success is 10% perspiration and 90% preparation. Can you talk the listeners through some tips on how to prepare for a conference when you're acting as a child rep?
Sure. So I'd say the first thing to do is really give some thought, particularly if you're a DLR, as to whether or not your client's going to be attending the conference. Because if they are, it's really important to give the registrar notice of that so the registrar can arrange the conference in a way that will best accommodate your client as registrars. If a young person's attending, at least from my point of view, they are one of the, if not the most important person at the conference. So it's important that we arrange the conference in a way that they're able to participate. But at the same time, we also have to balance some other things that need to be considered, like whether or not it might be a difficult situation for them to have to participate for the whole conference. So we can set up the conference so they can just be part of it at the beginning to share their views. Or even if that's not going to be the right option for them, their views could even be pre-recorded. But that's not the only way that we would hope a ILR or a DLR would prepare for a conference. It also really helps if you can think in advance about the goals of the DRC and things that you want to discuss, and particularly any gaps in the evidence that you want to discuss, and be prepared to think about how those gaps can be filled. Even though we don't have a formal process of an agenda being set before the conference, it's often helpful if in communication with the other parties and the registrar, you can give as much notice as possible of the things that you want to discuss that really would require other people to do a bit of work before the DRC. Another thing to think about is who's going to attend. So, for instance, if there's someone really important in the child's life that you think would have a vested interest in being there, request their attendance, and then we as registrars get to work in talking to other people about whether there's agreement that that person attend. And even if there's not agreement, the registrars have the discretion to make the decision about whether they attend or not. And we can only really exercise that discretion effectively if we have all the information we need to be able to decide that. Think about things, for instance, if the child has a disability, is there an NDIS plan, and whether or not there's a support plan coordinator that would be a relevant person to be at the conference. And also in the case of where your child might or young person might be identified as Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander, make sure that the cultural planning has occurred. So if that's an issue, that can be raised before the conference. So if it's the department that needs to be doing referrals to link up or including other people that are important in the child's life, that they are invited. And I guess the critical thing is that preparation is key, because if you don't come to the conference prepared, then it really leaves an impression, particularly for parents, that you're not taking your role seriously, and that they might feel that the responsibilities you have acting for their child or representing their child directly are things you're not prioritising. So it's important to prepare, but it's also really important that the other people at the conference can see that you have prepared.
Great, thanks, Katie. Could I just add a couple of things there as well? I think one of the things that I feel really strongly about is giving consideration to if there is a children's court clinician, whether they should be there. And I know that there are some conflicting views about the benefit or possible detriment of the clinician attending the DRC. But I think it's really important to remember that the clinician is an expert witness and is bound by that code. Any information that they hear at the DRC can still be tested in evidence. We can work with the parties around how to run the DRC if there are concerns about any disclosures that could be made by parents or other people, to make sure, for example, that the clinician attends the beginning of the DRC, shares some thoughts, but they don't necessarily, the parents don't need to speak in front of the clinician and make further disclosures. I think when you've got a report, in my experience, I haven't had a matter with a clinician attending that hasn't helped to advance the case. And from a child rep perspective, I think if there is any further assistance that a clinician could give, having them come to the conference to be able to flesh out some of those issues is vital. It doesn't prevent you from cross-examining and testing that evidence later, or considering whether further reports need to be prepared to address issues that came up during the conference.
And I think, Simon, that really, what you've said there is really important, and I think we probably underutilise or perhaps forget that that's available to us when we do have clinicians involved. And again, I think the point there is to remember that that should happen, and that the key is good preparation. So, raising that with the parties as early as possible, trying to get some kind of an understanding about what areas you might like to cover, so some of those concerns may be alleviated with some good planning and preparation from everybody that's involved.
That's it. And I think it's a bit about that critical thinking as well, not necessarily saying there is a clinician, so I must invite them to the DRC. It's a matter of thinking, what could they add to this discussion? What holes could they fill that may help us progress this matter further?
And in your experience, have you seen DRCs that have involved clinicians attending that have settled?
Yes, I haven't. In fact, I had one this week. And in that particular case, the clinician was really giving guidance to all the parties about the best way a contact plan could be put in place. The department had some ideas about how that should be that was quite rigid, and the clinician was really able to soften it up and really have input into that contact plan so the parents could work towards a state where contact was going to be unsupervised if certain conditions were met. But the clinician really helped guide how the department should word those documents that the parents had to consider, because in this case the parents had an intellectual disability, and the way the department had worded the contact plan was just way above what the parents' capacity to understand was. The clinician was very helpful, and that also in turn helped the ILR in being able to help explain how these parents could understand what their obligations were. I'd also just add that if you're an ILR or a DLR and you're considering filing a views and wishes statement, that this ideally should be done in that preparation stage for the DRC rather than turning up with it. We need to remember that a lot of the people attending the conferences, they're not attending in a professional capacity. They're attending as parents that are stressed, that might have a very low threshold for dealing with new information and change of plans. So as much time as you can give people to think through and work through and talk with their solicitor about, or if they're not represented, I guess just process that new information, that really helps the DRC run a lot more smoothly and not having people turn up feeling bombarded with new information that could have come to them earlier if people had just been a bit more prepared.
These conferences are really quite a unique part of the process, really, aren't they? Because we're in a court process, but this is really the only opportunity people have to sort of come together in a non-adversarial way and to interact with solicitors and other parties and clinicians in a way that they're not going to in that court process. So it does give really a really unique opportunity for people to feel heard, and you know, sometimes people will say that they want to have their day in court, and this is sometimes the only opportunity. So and having that clinician and good planning, as I said, is really
That's right. And I think we operate, or at least I operate, on a assumption that people, when they're involved in any court proceedings, but particularly in the children's court, the best outcome is typically driven by the parties themselves, because they're the ones that are going to be having the ongoing relationship. You know, if you have grandparents involved or relative carers, we finish dealing with the people on the day the matter finalises, but they continue to see each other for years, or not decades perhaps, into their lives. It's important that their relationships are maintained to the best level possible, and I think DRCs are a great forum for allowing that, as opposed to a courtroom where people are pitted against one another.
And there's plenty of research that supports the proposition that outcomes that are by consent and by agreement are much more likely to be complied with and accepted than those decisions that are imposed upon them by a court. So a really unique space.
But the other thing I'd probably say around preparation for the conference as well, when you've got children that are getting close to that threshold of being able to directly instruct, I'd really, really encourage practitioners to turn their mind to that well in advance of the DRC. Don't assume that just because a child is under 12 that they don't have that capacity. Critically think, should a younger child, should you be appointed as a DLR for a younger child? A child that's about to turn 12, do they have the capacity to instruct? Is there a need to continue as an ILR? But also think about that in the context of the timing of the DRC. We often see matters where the DRC was set down when the child was 11, but they've had a birthday in that time, and then a bit of a mad rush to work out, okay, is this person continuing in the role? If they're acting as ILR for younger siblings, are we trying to get a DLR involved at the last minute because no one's turned their mind to it in advance? The other thing is around, where does the DRC sit in the life of the proceedings generally? And you might still be a little bit off the child turning 12, but if we're thinking of a matter, for example, where it's very likely to run to final hearing and the child may have capacity to instruct by that stage, really consider earlier on, should their views be brought into it at this DRC stage? Any benefits obtained from the DRC, are they lost once we change representation model? And there's no right or wrong answer about that, but other than coming back to that, critically think, what does your client need? when do you think that they'll have capacity, and do you need to make any applications to help prepare for the DRC?
So it's about the child representatives constantly turning their minds, I guess, to what their obligations are under the Act in terms of if a child does, or if they do think a child has capacity, thinking through whether they might need to make that application, and that's a constant reassessment, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. The other thing as well is it's very common that filing deadlines aren't complied with. And there's some views out there that a DRC can't proceed if, for example, the parents haven't filed, and no one knows what case they're answering. My personal view on that is I just disagree with that. As you said, Katie, the DRC is one of the opportunities for the parents to actually have their say. And in a lot of cases, this process is so confronting for the parents that they may not be able to prepare an affidavit to actually put forward what they're needing to say, particularly if they're intending to make a concession of no realistic possibility of restoration. They may not be able to bring themselves to actually do that. I think proceeding with a DRC, even without some of that evidence filed, is still important, and I'd encourage child reps to keep an open mind about that. If there's further evidence that needs to come out of that, directions can be made at the end of the DRC, but it's an opportunity for everyone to discuss where things are at now, regardless of whether there's an affidavit to that effect.
Mm. And I think the other thing that comes out of that particular point is thinking through that if a DRC is vacated, how difficult it is to coordinate that many people's diaries in the first place, and the potential delay for the proceedings to finalise as well. So being mindful of trying to take that opportunity if you think you can when you've got it.
And I'd say as well that, again, critically thinking circumstances of the particular case, when that request is made by a party to vacate the DRC, I'd really encourage child reps to think about what would the impact of be on my client if this happened. Particularly if we've got a case where restoration is still an issue, you might have a child who's well aware of the circumstances, the proceedings, and that lengthy adjournment for another conference or whatever happens after that leaves the child or young person in limbo. So potentially that the ILR may need to push back on some of those requests at times, and just not be too accommodating if it's not in the interest of their client to do so.
And you'll be pleased to know that we've spent a lot of time in these podcasts talking about the importance of always having in the forefront of child reps' minds the objects and the principles of the Act when they're considering all of these types of decisions. Now, Simon, we've talked about preparation, so let's talk about actually participating in the conference itself. Have you got some ideas about how we can keep the child that we represent at the centre of the process?
Okay. So I think the first thing, the child can't and they shouldn't be reduced to just a name on the court file that's placed on the table in the conference room. Despite our best intentions, it can often be easy to lose sight of the human element, being the child, the subject of the DRC. The ILR and the DLR both play a very important role in bringing the child or the young person to life and at the front and centre of the discussions that take place in the conference. This might sound basic, but it's important as a child rep to make an effort to know and use the correct pronunciation of the name of the child or young person that you represent, and to use their name in discussions rather than referring to them as the child. We know, but we sometimes forget that the child never exists in a vacuum. They exist in a context of a social network around him or her. And apart from their parents, who are often present at the DRC, they also have siblings, cousins, friends, teachers, classmates, sport teammates, neighbours. The child rep is really well placed to remind everyone that any arrangements being made for the child should take into account their existing connections. And they are strong and positive. Sorry, if they are strong and positive, the importance of maintaining those connections. I think Caroline.
Yeah, I had a experience where in a DRC, the child rep really advocated strongly that the child should maintain those relationships that had been very important to that particular child, where they had a neighbour that was almost like a second family member, and the ILR made sure that the care plan included a a plan so that that person could remain involved in the child's life. That won't be for every case, but I think it's just important to always think of the particular child you're representing and getting to know their circumstances. And also, I guess, when we're talking to parents at DRCs, it's really important to try and maintain language that's respectful, non-judgmental, and, you know, unlikely to have the effect of you know, making someone angry or making them feel really judged. I don't want to focus on the negative, but sometimes we do see things happen at DRCs that when you're just looking on, you can really see a parent, you know, be made to feel terrible. Like, you know, I've heard an ILR say, you know, why on earth would you let your house get to that point? You know, it's disgusting. No one should have to live like that. I think it just goes without saying that our emotions really have to be checked at the door, and our judgments about what we think's right or wrong in child rearing. It's really about talking about what this child needs and how we can all work towards getting to that. I think rather than sort of rehashing what we know has already happened and you know, making people feel guilty about that.
I think to touch on something that you mentioned there, Caroline, about the choice of words. Picking your words is so, so important in this context. For example, that comments like "you're lucky you're being offered more contact than a lot of other parents that come to this court," the parent doesn't feel lucky. That's not going to help progress the discussions in any way. But I think when we're talking about picking words, it's also when you're relaying the views of the child. I think that can get really dangerous if you don't do that correctly. And I think it's important from a child rep perspective to remember that often in life, these children and parents find their way back together. We have this need to maintain some sort of family scaffolding longer term in this child's life. And when faced, the example that comes to mind here, a child who is saying quite clearly to their lawyer, "I don't want to see mum and dad, I want nothing to do with them." That's their instructions and that's what you're bound to put forward, but you need to be tactful and careful about how you do that. Relaying that to the parents is not going to assist, one, the discussions, but it's not also not going to assist this lifelong relationship between the child and parents. Considering those instructions and putting it forward along the lines of, I've met with your child, using their name, of course, I've met with your child, right now they're not ready. And I couldn't support it. I'm hopeful that one day we can work on rebuilding this relationship. It's still expressing the child's views that they're not ready and don't want that contact, but it's leaving the door open and not having the parent ruminate on that comment that was made and potentially placing blame on that on the child at later times, particularly if a decision's made that contact should occur. That's going to put the child in a really, really awful position, needing to face their parents after that.
Yeah, and I think the next step of that potentially, Simon, as well, is if you're of the view that contact should happen, then you might be talking to the parents in that conference about what might need to happen to help that relationship get back on track. So not only are you making sure that the views of the child are put in a way that's going to make sure those relationships can, you know, be rebuilt, but then providing some solutions or thinking about how those relationships can be worked on as well.
I couldn't agree more. Okay. I think it's also important in terms of the conduct of the DRC generally, for a child rep to be really mindful of the optics of the situation, and to try and see things from a parent's perspective and how a parent might perceive your interactions. And the example that comes to mind here, if you're waiting outside the conference room, avoid a situation where possible, if it could seem to the parent that you're in cahoots with the department or with other representatives, by laughing or talking about other cases or unrelated social matters. For you, this might just be another day at work or another DRC, but it's likely to be a serious occasion or a really massive event in the lives of the parents and the other family members that are here, and something that they will remember.
Yeah, and I think it's some of the things that I certainly am mindful of is making sure that I'm sitting away from other legal reps. Even things like making sure I don't get into a lift with one of the legal reps or multiple legal reps because of the perception that I might be favouring somebody in particular. I mean, we might not be, And we might not perceive it that way, but certainly for a parent that might be very difficult for them to stomach, and potentially that will impact upon how they feel about the process and their willingness to sort of engage in the process and negotiate and settle.
Yeah, and on that practical side of things, that extends once you get into the room as well. Rarely, we will where appropriate, but rarely will the children's registrar be saying, you sit here and this person sit here in the room and directing. Usually people will pick their own locations around the table. But as a child rep, if you come in and plonk down next to the department in a really contentious case and then present a view that's consistent with the department, that's got some serious optics for the parents. And just considering things like that, where should I place myself? And having a chat with whoever is chairing the conference about where would you like me to sit? Could be really helpful in managing those sorts of things.
Mm. Carolyn, let's talk about the role of the ILR and the role of the DLR. There are, of course, some similarities in what they both need to do, but there are also some significant differences, and that can extend to their roles within a DRC. Can you talk us through some of the specific issues for ILRs in DRCs?
Sure. So I think for an ILR, it's really important that at the beginning of the DRC that you explain your role really clearly in language that parents will understand. It can help break the ice sometimes just by sharing some very neutral observations about the child, and it also helps with their positives. So, for example, a statement like, I've met with Peter, he's a really lovely child. I met with him at school. He was really articulate and excited to tell me about the names of all his favourite Marvel characters. And he's really looking forward to going into year three next year because he's going to be a sports leader. So he's excited about that. And usually as registrars, when we see people do this as ILRs, you can see the parent immediately soften, relax, and just feel really proud of their child being spoken about in such positive terms. Obviously, in every case, you can't do this. You might meet a child who doesn't present like that. But if you do, I think it always helps just to start with a comment like that. Also, if you're an ILR, it's obviously important that you've turned your mind to whether or not you're going to speak to the child before the conference. And if you have, explained to the parents and the people at the conference the reasons why either you have or you haven't. So even if you act for a very young child who obviously can't speak to you and you it wouldn't be appropriate to talk to them, it still can be helpful just to let the parents know that you have found out how they're going. You might have spoken to the carers or spoken to their childcare workers, just so it's clear that you have taken an active interest in how they're going. It's often really helpful for parents to just hear the neutral voice of a person rather than hearing all those updates from the department. The department obviously will give an update, but it's also helpful to hear it from the ILR. Now, if you have interviewed a child prior to the conference and taken note of the things that they've told you, it's important that you can convey this at the DRC, and this can have a really powerful impact sometimes, something that you might not expect, but I've seen that happen. So I can give an example of a conference where domestic violence was an issue, and for months and months the parents had been denying that their arguing had had any impact on the child, that the department had overreacted in their intervention. And the ILR, in a very calm, rational, non-contentious way, was able to just communicate that they'd spent time talking to their child, and their child had talked about how they felt scared, and when the fighting that they could hear was happening, they would hide under the bed and shut the door. Hearing that from the ILRs just stopped the parent who was denying that the child had been exposed to it in their tracks. And in that particular matter, I think that it did change the direction of the parents' approach, and the department started to then work with that family in addressing the issues.
Great. I think the other thing to consider from an ILR's perspective is do you have a view, albeit preliminary? It can be really frustrating at times where there's enough material before the court, but an ILR is not prepared to share a view. I would encourage ILRs to not be afraid to share their view. It's important for them to be open and honest, but they can also acknowledge that their view may change subject to further evidence that comes to light or if the child's situation changes. I think it's also worthwhile for an ILR, if they are expressing a preliminary view, to consider providing some context about how they arrived at that position. You could preface it by saying something like, based on the material I've reviewed to date, having met and spoken with your child, my view is X. You could consider commenting on the positive aspects of the case and your areas of concern. So if the contact reports are very clear that contact is a positive experience and that the parent is making a great effort to be consistent and it being a positive experience for the child, make sure that you're clearly putting that forward, and particularly if you're saying you're supportive of contact being maintained at its current frequency. If you've got concerns, you could say, for example, I'll be assisted by further information that can be provided by DCJ or a parent about the status of mum's progress or dad's progress attending upon their treating psychologist. You can say that you're still concerned that the issues raised by the DCJ in the initial application report remain outstanding and that you don't currently support a plan for restoration. But you could also outline what you need to see moving forward to change that view. I think it's really important as well to, if you are supporting the department's position, to go further than just say, I support the department's position for the reasons that they've outlined. Articulate your reasons as your own, even if they do align with the department's reasons.
I agree with you, Simon, because as well, I think it's important to remember that you are not an agent of the department. You are separate, and you've got a different role. So it's important, I think, to distinguish yourself from the department and not simply just say that you're going to fall into line with them. You want to be saying, well, you know, I formed my own independent view. Based on what I have read, so that's a really important part of it.
That's right. I think for an ILR as well, at times forming that independent view, it can be a very lonely role, and sometimes in a conference the ILR may be the only dissenting voice in the room, but I'd encourage ILRs to be courageous, stand by your views, back up your views, and don't be afraid to put them forward.
Sometimes you have to be the stick in the mud, don't you?
That's it.
Okay.
I think that the biggest thing that I could stress as well for an ILR is where there are positives in a case, acknowledge it. It can be a real blow for parents to hear that they're not being supported in their restoration case. And that could be a turning point for them. If they are making progress, but they're not there yet, make that clear. Give them some hope to continue working on that path. Because where it's safe for the children to return to parents, it's clearly going to be everyone's goal, whether it's now or sometime down the future.
And that is, of course, the best outcome for children when they can go home. So
yeah.
Let's talk about direct legal representatives in DRCs. What types of things should they be turning their minds to?
Okay, well, I think the first thing that they really need to consider is their client going to participate? We touched on a little bit earlier around that right to participation, and that from a children's registrar's perspective, we won't be refusing the child's participation, but we really want to work with the representative to work out how that could happen. I think it's important as well to make sure that you've got instructions from your client about whether they want to participate. Don't just assume that they don't want to. They should be given that option and then really workshopped with us about how can we make that a safe and secure experience for them. I think it's also important to make sure that DLRs remember their role of direct instructions. The number of times you hear the line, I'm instructed X, but I think Y, really need to take a step back and remember you're acting on direct instructions, you're not a best interest legal representative, and that you have to rely on the other people in the room to present that contrary view in those circumstances.
But that flows on to the point that you're going to make now, isn't it, about reality testing of your client's instructions and coming up with some other alternatives.
That's right. So I think you need to be instructed full stop for the DRC. If in preparation you don't necessarily know the views of the parents leading up to it, that's not a good enough reason to come to the DRC saying, I haven't met with the young person because I didn't know what was going to happen here today. You're a direct legal representative. And the evidence, you can usually foreshadow a number of paths that could be taken. It's important to cover all of those bases, to have a plan A, a plan B, a plan C. If this happens, what do you want me to tell them? If this happens, what should I do then? Okay, so when you're acting as a direct legal representative, often your client's instructions won't accord with what the court may do and won't accord with what proposals are being put forward by other parties. So it is really helpful to reality test all of those plans that are being put forward and make sure that your young person as a client is aware of what a likely outcome may be and that you'll advocate for what their views are. But if the case is going in a particular manner, they should still be given the opportunity to comment on what they would like to do if that happens. They might say, I want to go home, but that's not going to be a reality. And you need to be brave enough to say, that may not happen. If that doesn't happen, we need to talk about contact. What could that look like for you? I think, Caroline, you had a recent example about needing to reality test?
Yeah, and I did. And in that case, it was actually the DLR that needed to reality test the department. It was a case really where the young person was going to go home no matter what. They were 14, or maybe about 15. They were going to self-place at home. So it was really about figuring out what could the department put in place at home to make that a better option for that young person. And I guess on that note, it's a very fine line because even though your client might be, say, 13 and very able to instruct you, they still are only 13 and only have the emotional capacity to deal with things as a 13-year-old. So I can think of another conference where the young person desperately wanted to go home and the parents didn't want the young person to come home because of the effect their behaviours was having on the younger siblings. And the parents weren't very subtle or kind about the way that they were communicating that. So in that particular case, I spoke to the DLR. He was actually in a residential setting, so he wasn't able to attend the court, but we brought him in via an AVL link up. And at the beginning of the conference, he very clearly shared what he wanted and what his position was. And then we excused him. He didn't want to participate for the rest of the conference. But then those discussions where his parents were making those comments that would have been very distressing for him to hear, his lawyer could, I guess, absorb that for him and then take it back to him. So we had breaks every 20 minutes so his lawyer could just update him with what was happening. So he still was part of the conference in a way, but just not having to hear all those discussions. And I guess on that note, you know, when you're dealing with 13 and 14-year-olds, two or three hours is a very long time to be sitting in a room talking. I mean, it's a long time for adults. So I would, I guess I'd say to DLRs, if you have a client that wants to come to the conference and wants to participate for that whole time, just ensure that they've had breakfast or they've had lunch beforehand, that they've got snacks, alert the registrar if they need to take breaks. You know, we don't want people sitting in a conference on their phones the whole time. Teenagers often do that. So maybe we take a break every 20 minutes if they want to call a friend or just give them options. But yeah, I think we do have to cater for them in a very different way to obviously what you would an adult.
And as we said before, that involves a lot of forward planning, and we would really, really encourage DLRs in particular to pick up the phone, have a chat with us and see if we can brainstorm a way for their client to participate if they're wanting to participate. As Caroline said, they might be here for part of the conference only. We might look at things such as, can they come in by AVL from somewhere else? In some recent matters that we've had as well, we've even gone so far as to organise a pre-record, we're working with the child representative so that the child could feel that they had been heard and been able to personally express their views without being subject to the conference themselves. I think in the cases where we've seen that happen, it's been quite powerful for everyone to hear that.
Yeah, I agree. It really sets the tone for the conference, and I've had a lot of feedback that it worked for everyone. It even worked for maybe the parent who maybe didn't want to necessarily see their child live if they weren't with their child and wanted to be with them, but was able to really sense what their child wanted.
Yeah, and it's kind of think outside the box. Work with us. We can come up with a plan. Pre-record isn't going to be suitable in every occasion. Physical attendance isn't going to be suitable in every occasion. An AVL, not every occasion. We need to work out what's best for that particular matter.
And I think just on that note, I would say as well that sometimes with the best laid plans, things need to change on the day. But you guys, I know, are incredibly flexible and adaptive depending upon what needs to happen. So while you may have a particular plan for how things are going to go. There are plenty of times when they don't, and the plan can be changed. So don't be reluctant to say, look, this, you know, maybe the child has changed their mind, or finding it all a bit overwhelming, and can we think about another way? And I'm sure you guys will be receptive to that.
That's right. And I think flexibility is key, but I'd also probably just say to DLRs in particular, if you've got a 10 a.m. conference, maybe don't schedule a meeting for something else at 9 a.m. or often right before the conference. That is when people might change their mind. The young person might want to speak to you. So yeah, but just being available even that in that time before the conference can be really beneficial.
And I think I would really just stress to practitioners as well that as children's registrars, we are really observing what is happening in the room, not just what is being said. And we're on particularly high alert when we have a young person in the conference. We're trying to scan the room. We're trying to monitor everyone's body language. For example, just this week, I had a 12-year-old attend a conference who, above the table, he seemed to be going okay. I was positioned in the room in a way where I could see underneath the table as well, and I could see his legs twitching, him kind of clutching his hands. He really wasn't coping, and we were able to stop, take some breaks, give him a time out, let him speak to some of his support people, and then continue going. So we are going to be on high alert for that, and we're not going to if your client's there, we're not going to do anything that's going to intentionally cause them any extra distress, and that they've gotten out at every step of the way.
Because that would defeat the purpose, wouldn't it?
It would, yeah.
Do you guys have any final words of wisdom for our listeners today?
Only just to encourage you to always try and work with us registrars. We're always available to take a phone call or an email prior to the conference, and we really do rely on ILRs and DLRs to help us. It's not a one-person job assessing how to run a conference when a young person's involved. So we're relying on your expertise and your commitment to making it a really positive experience for your client as well.
I couldn't say that any better.
Okay. Thank you both for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Katie.